From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Based on the recent statement of North Korea, I have decided to terminate the planned summit in Singapore on June 12th.
That was the surprise announcement Thursday from U.S. President Donald Trump, referring to a summit planned with the leader of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or North Korea, for next month.
Well, many things can happen, and a great opportunity lies ahead, potentially. I believe that this is a tremendous setback for North Korea, and indeed, a setback for the world. I've spoken to General Mattis and the Joint Chiefs of Staff and our military, which is by far the most powerful anywhere in the world, that has been greatly enhanced recently, as you all know, is ready if necessary. Likewise, I have spoken to South Korea and Japan, and they are not only ready should foolish or reckless acts be taken by North Korea, but they are willing to shoulder much of the cost of any financial burden, any of the costs associated by the United States in operations, if such an unfortunate situation is forced upon us. Hopefully, positive things will be taking place with respect to the future of North Korea. But if they don't, we are more ready than we have ever been before. North Korea has the opportunity to end decades of poverty and oppression by following the path of denuclearization and joining the community of nations. And I hope that Kim Jong-un will ultimately do what is right, not only for himself, but perhaps most importantly, what's right for his people, who are suffering greatly and needlessly. All of the Korean people, North and South, deserve to be able to live together in harmony, prosperity, and peace. That bright and beautiful future can only happen when the threat of nuclear weapons is removed. No way it can happen otherwise. If and when Kim Jong-un chooses to engage in constructive dialogue and actions, I am waiting. In the meantime, our very strong sanctions, by far the strongest sanctions ever imposed, and maximum pressure campaign will continue, as it has been continuing. But no matter what happens and what we do, we will never, ever compromise the safety and security of the United States of America. I want to make that statement, feel very, very strongly about it. Our military, as you know, has been greatly enhanced, will soon be at a level that it's never been before. Our approval of $700 billion this year and $716 billion next year, largely due to the help of a lot of the people with me today and standing right here, we appreciate. But we had to do that for our military, and we've done it. And hopefully everything's going to work out well with North Korea. And a lot of things can happen, including the fact that perhaps, and would wait, it's possible that the existing summit could take place or a summit at some later date. Nobody should be anxious. We have to get it right.
That was U.S. President Donald Trump Thursday announcing an adjournment of the meeting that had been previously set with Kim Jong-un of North Korea. For more on that, we have this from RT's Samira Khan.
The timing of this is certainly significant. It comes just hours after North Korea destroyed its only nuclear testing site, fulfilling just yet another condition North Korea agreed to make sure the meeting happens. Now, our correspondent was at the site, and he was among a few journalists who were allowed to witness it firsthand.
We've just visited the Punggye-ri nuclear test site, which is, frankly, no more. We saw three out of four tunnels there used for nuclear testing. One of them, the north tunnel, actually was used for the latest five nuclear tests. The other two were new, and North Koreans told us that they had been ready to conduct nuclear tests there at any moment. So for them, blowing up the explosives inside was the real way of showing how they are ready to make real concessions. Now, the spectacle itself was quite impressive. The explosions looked like small eruptions of earth and rock from under the ground. Of course, we journalists couldn't really estimate as to how much damage what we witnessed today dealt to Pyongyang's nuclear program as a whole. But North Korea insists that they've made the first step. And now, well, now they will expect something in return. Now, we're on our way back to Wonsan. And so as soon as possible, we will be filing more reports.
So North Korea is keeping its end of the bargain for the sake of the meeting. But even though the decision to cancel the meeting came from the U.S. side, the White House seemed excited about it. And they released a commemorative coin depicting the two leaders all smiles and meeting just ahead of the summit. But the talks were seen world over as a positive development in bilateral relations. And Trump didn't shy away from taking credit. He even said that everyone said that he deserved a Nobel Peace Prize for it. But towards the end of today's letter, Trump signed off saying that he's looking forward to meeting with Kim in the future. But it seems that North Korea should be a little bit more cautious dealing with Trump in the future.
The issue of nuclear weapons on the Korean Peninsula has been a longstanding point of irritation between Washington, Seoul, and Pyongyang. RT's Donald Corder has more.
This is a good deal for the United States. North Korea will freeze and then dismantle its nuclear program. South Korea and our other allies will be better protected. The entire world will be safer as we slow the spread of nuclear weapons.
The deal did sound good, but it collapsed a few years later. The U.S. promised North Korea two nuclear reactors, 500,000 tons of fuel a year, and a lifting of sanctions. But it didn't deliver. Fast forward to 2018, and yet another U.S. administration is promising to strike a deal with Pyongyang. Or is it?
You know, there's a chance that it'll work out. There's a chance, it's a very substantial chance that it won't work out.
I think it'll be very successful, but as I always say, who knows?
You know, I often say, who knows? Who knows?
We'll see how it all works out. Maybe it will, maybe it won't.
So are we going to be tantalized with another good deal with North Korea that's ready to go, only to see it fail again? Perhaps the U.S. sees the status quo of seeing North Korea as the ultimate threat as being something beneficial.
South Korea is spending billions of dollars making bases and paying U.S. troops, essentially, to be there to ostensibly protect against a threat up in the north. Now, that being the case, if there were to be peace in Korea, there's going to be questionings, well, do we need our troops there? And so I think in that sense, there are forces that don't want a resolution that benefit off the instability and allow us to maintain these troops and dozens of bases and posts in this small country in a region that we think strategically is important.
Enemies of a government are friends of its military-industrial complex, and having a nemesis like North Korea is a great excuse to pump up that military budget.
The request includes an additional $4 billion to support urgent missile defeat and defense enhancements to counter the threat from North Korea, $0.7 billion to repair damage to U.S. Navy ships, and $1.2 billion in support of my administration's South Asia strategy.
Japan is one ally that stands to benefit from U.S. military expansion, especially after the recent re-election of its prime minister, who vowed to defend Japan from North Korean aggression, weeks after Pyongyang's missile launches.
This election is about whether we can defend Japan from North Korea and ensure we live happily.
And the unpredictability on the Korean Peninsula has fringe benefits for some American rivals. The South China Sea has been a serious bone of contention as of late, with the U.S. attempting to assert its naval presence there, much to Beijing's annoyance. So, the larger threat of North Korea's nuclear program has shifted U.S. military attention that would otherwise be focused towards China. And although Russia doesn't directly benefit from its unpredictable neighbor, it certainly doesn't mind a challenge to U.S. dominance in the region.
What these countries are just beginning to recognize is that getting into an arms race, as it's increasing in Japan, as China is expanding its military operations, it takes money out of the economic sector, damages an economy, which weakens their economy, is a very complicated issue, except for the South Koreans, who are essentially getting the short end of the stick. This is something that must change, that countries, as they begin to take the spreadsheet and figure it out, they will begin to benefit the countries in the region from peace in Northeast Asia.
President Trump's announcement of the adjournment of next month's meeting with Kim Jong-un, followed by a day, the first meeting between the new U.S. Secretary of State and China's foreign minister. This was a joint press conference held at the White House Wednesday between Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi.
I'm pleased today to host State Councilor and Foreign Minister Wang Yi here in Washington for my first meeting with Secretary of State. And thank you. It's wonderful to see you. As you know, the President and this administration is committed to a constructive, results-oriented relationship with China. And I'm glad to hear from State Councilor Wang that Beijing shares those goals. We had a great meeting. We talked about preparations for the President's June 12th meeting with Kim Jong-un. I had a chance to hear China's perspective and appreciated their observations on the opportunity that is before the United States, the DPRK, and the world. We discussed our firm commitment to maintain pressure on North Korea and to continue fully enforcing all relevant UN Security Council resolutions related to North Korea until we see and achieve the complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. We confirmed today that we continue to expect all countries, including China, will meet their obligations and fully implement those measures. China, the United States, South Koreans, Japan, we are all fully committed to a bright future for the DPRK if Pyongyang is willing to denuclearize. Until that time arrives, the pressure will continue. I emphasize the President's firm determination to secure balanced and fair trade investment relationship. We know that the discussions are ongoing. Our trade teams will continue their regular engagements on these very important matters to each of our two countries. I also raised our concerns about the militarization of the South China Sea. We had a good discussion. We have other important priorities in our relationship with China as well, such as stopping the flow of opioids coming from China into the United States, protecting American intellectual property, and upholding human rights and religious freedom. We had a wonderful discussion where we hope that our two countries can build an excellent relationship the same way for our two countries together. I look forward to traveling to visit with you in Beijing in the not-too-distant future and to continue the discussions that we had today. Councilor Wang will now share some remarks, and then I'm happy to take a question at the conclusion of his remarks. Welcome.
I am here for a stopover after I attended the G20 Foreign Ministers meeting in Argentina, together with the Secretary of the State. This is our first meeting. I hope to establish good working relationship with him. Because this is a stopover, so there was not a plan for a joint press conference. Mr. Secretary of State was keen for us to meet with the press together. And I said, we defer as the guest to our host, Just now we had a very candid and in-depth discussion. We first discussed the bilateral relationship between China and the United States. We both believe that China-U.S. relationship is the most important bilateral relationship to each other. We both believe that our cooperation far outweighs differences and opportunities we face far outweighs challenges. We commend the strategic guidance that our two presidents provide to China-U.S. relationship, and we are ready to work to implement the series of consensus reached by the two presidents, including respecting each other's major interests and properly handling Taiwan and other sensitive issues. And we need to stay clear of disruptions and overcome difficulties and work together to ensure that China-U.S. relationship will continue to enjoy sound and healthy development. We both believe that the two teams have conducted intensive discussions recently on trade. These discussions are constructive and have produced positive and important progress. We believe it is important that both sides are willing to do addition instead of reduction to ease as early as possible and finally address the trade imbalance. We hope that these common understanding could be implemented at an early date through further and detailed consultations. We both hope to strengthen cooperation on international and regional issues and facilitate the political solution to hotspot issues. In general, we hope that with us working together, the cooperation list between our two sides could be longer and the list of differences will get shorter and shorter. On the Korean nuclear issue that is at the center of attention, we also exchanged views. I listened to the analysis of Mr. Secretary on the recent development of the situation and his perspectives. I want to tell you that, first of all, China is firmly committed to denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. This position will not change. At the same time, we believe that in achieving the process or the goal of denuclearization, it is necessary to address the legitimate security concerns of the DPRK at an appropriate time. And along with the realization of denuclearization, it is important to establish a long-term and effective peace mechanism on the Korean Peninsula. And second, China firmly supports the meeting between the United States and the DPRK leaders. Direct and contact and dialogue between the leaders is key to addressing the nuclear issue on the Korean Peninsula. We look forward to seeing the meeting take place as scheduled and be successful. We believe that President Trump and Chairman Kim Jong-un are fully able and they have the wisdom to make the right decision and bring peace to the Korean Peninsula and bring good news to the world. And thirdly, China firmly honors its due international obligation. We will continue to fully and strictly implement UN Security Council resolutions on the DPRK and continue to work to maintain peace and stability of the Korean Peninsula. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We have time for one question for first, we'll go to Andrea Mitchell from NBC News, and then my counterpart will take over and call upon some of her colleagues for a question for the leader.
Thank you very much, Undersecretary Nauert. Mr. Secretary, Councilor Wang. Mr. Secretary, first, do you anticipate that, contrary to some suggestions from the DPRK and certainly the President's cautions yesterday that there is a substantial chance that the summit will not take place, do you believe that it will take place on November 12th, that the obstacles can be overcome? Secondly, I wanted to ask you about the decision by the United States today to disinvite China from participating in the military exercises in the South China Seas. You discussed the militarization of the South China Seas, and I wanted to know from your talks whether you have been satisfied with China's response and Minister Wang, how concerned are you by this disinvitation to participate, and whether you too are satisfied that the meeting on November 12th will take place? And finally, if you'll forgive one more question, Mr. Secretary, you raised the issue of what happened to an American diplomat with mild brain trauma in Guangzhou. And it sounds very similar to what was experienced by our diplomats in Cuba. Are you satisfied with the security and safety of our diplomats in China? And if not, would you take retaliatory steps, as the United States did against Havana, and withdraw diplomats and also demand that diplomats leave the United States? And finally, if I could ask your indulgence, Mr. Wang, if you could explain what happened and whether you are taking steps to investigate the safety of our diplomats and perhaps other diplomats under your guardianship in your country. Thank you so very much.
So let me try to answer them in the reverse sequence that you asked them. First, with respect to the health incident that occurred, we're concerned about it. It's a serious medical incident. We want to make sure and take care of every one of our officers serving overseas. We've learned about it only recently. We are still trying to identify all the circumstances surrounding it. We've notified China of what took place as best we know it, and they have responded in a way that is exactly the right response. They've honored their commitment under the Vienna Convention to take care of the diplomats that are serving in their country, and we truly appreciate this. They've offered to assist us in investigating how this came to be, and our State Councilor Wong and I had a moment to talk about how we can endeavor to figure out what happened here to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again in their country. And so we're working together to resolve it. I look forward to it. I hope we can figure it out. It's very important that each and every one of our officers, wherever they're serving in the world, is protected and taken care of. Second, you asked about June 12th. We're still working, driving towards the date. I hope that it takes place. Chairman Kim requested a meeting. President Trump agreed. We worked to find a date and a location. We've had it settled, and I'm hopeful. What I can say for sure is our team is preparing up and down the administration. President will absolutely be prepared for the meeting as well, and I hope that we can have this opportunity, this historic opportunity, to do something that would truly transform this global challenge that's been threatening the world for an awfully long time. Can you remind me, Andrea, your second question? It was about RIMPAC and the disinvitation of RIMPAC. Yes.
The disinvitation for the military exercise.
State Councilor Wong and I spoke about it. I will leave to DOD to talk about that, only to say that we've expressed consistent concern about militarization in the South China Sea. We had a chance to talk about that. And I will leave to our militaries to talk about their efforts together.
I'm from CCTV. Recently, the U.S. has taken some negative moves on Taiwan, and that has caused high attention and dissatisfaction on the part of the Chinese people. My question to Mr. Secretary is that, is there any change in the U.S. on the One China principle, and also views from State Councilor Wong? Thank you.
It's the same policy that America's had consistently. There has not been any change there. State Council Wong.
This is a question on Taiwan and whether the U.S. has changed its policy. That's indeed is a reflection of the concerns of the Chinese people. Mr. Secretary has said that there's no change to the U.S. policy, and we don't want to see a change. There should not be a change. This touches upon the political foundation of China-U.S. relations. We would urge the U.S. to honor the One China principle and the stipulations in the three joint communiques and prudently and properly manage Taiwan-related issues to uphold the overall interests of China-U.S. relations and peace and stability across the straits. Just now, the U.S. reporter asked about a U.S. diplomat in China. Our understanding, this is an individual case of an American diplomat in Guangzhou. China has been investigating this matter in a very responsible manner, and we haven't found that any organization or individual has carried out such a sonic influence. We will stay in communication with the U.S. through diplomatic channels, and we would suggest that U.S. side can also carry out some internal investigation. We don't want to see that this individual case will be magnified, complicated, or even politicized. We hope people will not associate it with other unnecessary matters. China will, in accordance with law, protect all the lawful rights and interests of foreigners in China, especially those of diplomats. That's our firm commitment. On the Pentagon's decision or disinvitation of a Chinese military in the RIMPAC exercise, we find that a very non-constructive move. It's also a decision that's taken lightly. It's unhelpful to mutual understanding between China and the U.S. We hope the U.S. will change such a negative mindset. Both China and U.S. are big countries, and we are well positioned to have greater cooperation at sea. And mill-to-mill exchanges will help to increase mutual trust. It will also help us to make greater efforts towards world peace and stability. On the so-called militarization in the South China Sea, we talked about this issue just now. China is only building civilian and some necessary defense facilities on our own islands. That is the right to self-defense and preservation of every sovereign state. It is a normal deployment and has nothing to do with militarization. Just like the U.S. has military presence in Hawaii, in Guam, and China's deployment is at a much smaller scale than the U.S. It's just out of necessary defense purposes. We don't hope to see any exaggeration or hype up of this matter. Whether the summit between U.S. and DPRK will go ahead as scheduled, I made it very clear that we hope it will go ahead as scheduled, and we hope it will be productive, it will deliver outcomes. There is already good basis and necessary conditions at the moment. And I told our U.S. colleagues that if you want to solve the problem, now is the time. If you want peace, now is the time. If you want to make history, now is the time. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.